Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we begin our chapter 8 today. And this chapter moves on from all the introductions and preparations for the path for the inner life to sort of integrating this, all integrating all what we have learned before and integrating the teachings into our daily life more and more. So, Gateka, in the attainment of the inner life, there are five things necessary. The first thing that is necessary is the mastery of mind. And this is done by unlearning all that one has learned. The inner knowledge is not gained by adding to the knowledge one has already achieved in life, for it requires a rock foundation. So one cannot build a house on rocks on a foundation of sand. House of rocks on a foundation of sand. In order to make the foundation of rocks, one has to dig into the sand and build the foundation on the rocks below. Very often, therefore, it becomes difficult for an intellectual person who through life has learned things and understood them by the power of intellect to attain to the inner life. So we need to dig deeper, we need to go deeper, we need to go beyond the intellectual knowledge, and in some ways forget about everything that we have learned in life, but not be kind of sad about it, or not be thinking that, oh, this was all wasted time, because it has all been useful, it has all been preparing us for where we are going now. It's Hafsatinat Khan is talking about the intellectual learning, it's like the comparing it with the baby chick who is in the shell of the egg. And then at some point, the shell needs to be broken in order for the chick to become free and start living their full potential. So for these two paths are different. The one goes to the north and the other to the south. When a person says, I have now walked so many miles to the south, shall I therefore reach sooner something that exists in the north? He must know that he will not reach it sooner but later, because as many hours as they have walked to the south, they must walk back in order to reach the north. It's the same thing that I just said about, the more we learn of the, you could say, material things or the worldly knowledge, the more shedding we need to do before we are able to have our cup empty and ready to move on. There is this... visualize or imagine for a moment. There is an ant who wants to walk to the south. So the ant is constantly walking to the south, but it's on the back of the elephant who is walking to the north. So which way is the ant really moving? So in that same way, you know, we need to, you know, like the ant, we need to kind of stop that, you know, moving, you know, trying to move south, if the whole of our essence wants to go to the north. So we just need to learn to align ourselves with that, with the elephant, in order to move to the north. So, you know, humankind, intrigued by externals, has lost sight of its essence, like the ant walking south. However, the more one is capable of forgetting the worldly knowledge or unlearning it, the more capable they are of attaining the object for which they tread the spiritual path. So the more we are unable to unlearn and forget about the knowledge that, you know, the worldly knowledge, the more able we are to attain the true wisdom, the essence of the wisdom. When we meditate, we are, then meditation is taking us in a different direction. We are looking inward and not outward. The very word, I'm just reading snippets. The very word enthusiasm originally meant to be concerned with the gods, to turn in that direction instead of being concerned with worldly affairs. That's so beautiful, enthusiasm, to be concerned with gods. Now the question is, how do we unlearn? Learning is forming a knot in the mind. Whatever one learns from experience or from a person, one makes a knot of it in the mind. And there are as many knots found as there are things one has learned. Unlearning is unraveling the knot. And it is as hard to unlearn as it is to untie a knot. Some knots we have tied very, very tightly, and they are, you know, take more effort to untie. So it's kind of like, you know, when in this world we are becoming more and more specialized in narrow kind of bandwidths of you know, of interests, like scientists are focusing on one question, or even the education system is concerned with only a very narrow bandwidth of potential knowledge, and by doing that, it's you know, they're losing the sight of the bigger picture. And that's what, when we are starting to unlearn these very specific bits of knowledge, then we are opening our mind to being able to hear and perceive the wider picture, or wider, to understand wider wisdom of the world, really. A knot is a limited reason. When one unravels it, its limitation is taken away and it is open. And when the mind becomes smooth by unlearning and by digging out all impressions of good and bad, of right and wrong, then the ground of the heart becomes as cultivated ground, just as the land does after plowing. So, and to illustrate this, you know, just because I was recently in Turkey and Tunisia with Vina, then and I was kind of getting more in touch with some of the Nasruddin stories again. So I'm gonna tell you a Nasruddin story. So, and I can't remember if I actually told that one in Turkey or not, but it's one when a neighbor comes to Nasruddin and wants to borrow Nasruddin's donkey. And Nasruddin does not want to lend out the donkey. He's kind of like, oh no. So he says, oh no, you know, I don't have the donkey right now. I have already lent it to somebody else. And in the same moment, donkey brays loudly in the backyard. So the neighbor is like, Mulla, what are you saying? You know, I hear the donkey just here. You know, you are lying to me. And then Nasruddin, totally indignant, looks at the neighbor and says, who do you believe, me or the donkey? So it's kind of like, that's what we are doing. You know, this knowledge, the worldly knowledge that we have, you know, it's kind of like we sort of cheat ourselves, or we're trying to convince ourselves of something, and totally ignoring the real truth. And then kind of being indignant about it as well at the same time. So there you go. Yeah, another story, but that's one. This one is not the Nasruddin story, but it's also about the learning and unlearning. It's the story of a scholar who is being rowed over the sea by a boatman. And as they go, the boatman is rowing, and it's a simple man. And then the scholar, feeling quite kind of proud and wanting to make intellectual conversation with the boatman, so asks, have you studied philosophy? And the boatman is, no. Well, you wasted half your life. And then they go on, and then the scholar says, well, have you at least studied grammar? No, the boatman asks, you know, still rowing. Well, you have wasted 3/4 of your life. So then they row on, and then the boat hits a rock and starts sinking. And then the boatman says, have you studied swimming? No, you have wasted all of your life. So, so what are we learning and what are we unlearning here? Okay. The second thing, so the first thing that we need for attainment of inner life is the unlearning. And then the second thing that we need is, in the attainment of the inner life, is to seek a spiritual guide. Someone whom we can absolutely trust and have every confidence in. Someone to whom we can look up and with whom we are in sympathy, which would culminate in what is called devotion. So now, especially in the Western world, we have a very sort of sometimes cynical mind about, you know, having a teacher. That, oh, I don't want to, you know, I'm not sure about this person. I'm not sure if they are perfect enough. So, the Sufi teaching is that the teacher and pupil walk the path together. Sometimes this may be literally so. The teacher will walk so the pupil can get his rhythm, his or her rhythm, not their qualities or content. So that's what we are doing when we are walking with a teacher. We are, the teacher is not passing on any content or knowledge, which might come at some point along the path, but the main thing is to learn to be in tune and in rhythm with a guide, to catch that spiritual vibration. So that's why we are aligning us ourselves with a teacher to not learn from their personality in a way, but from the vibration and from the atmosphere that they're radiating out. So, like a musician, like a violin player, actually, Hasratinath Khan is talking here about violin players, but basically, like a musician, we are tuning ourselves to to our teachers, like a musician is tuning their instrument. So, the third thing that is necessary to spiritual attainment is the receiving of knowledge. So first we unlearn, we empty our cup. Then the second we are finding a guide who we can attune ourselves with. And then the third thing is receiving of knowledge. And this being knowledge of the inner world, it cannot be compared with the knowledge one has learned before. That is why it is necessary to unlearn the former. And Hasratinath Khan is talking about three different ways of accumulating this inner knowledge. First one is the first stage is the receiving of the knowledge. When we do nothing but receive, it's like when we are eating. We're just taking it in, and no judgment, no but this, that, or the other. We're just taking it in. The second stage is assimilating what we have learned. It's like when we are digesting after a meal. And we just allow the teachings to kind of fall into place inside of us and make it our own, so that we understand it with our according to our own experiences. Hasratinath Khan says that we think upon it, we ponder upon it, in order that it may remain in our mind. It's just like eating food and then assimilating it. And then the third stage is the reasoning it out by oneself. We do not reason it out as soon as we have received it, because if we did, we would lose the whole thing. We need that processing in between. It is processes that one learns and then content. But when one goes to the content without advancing in the processes, one adds quantitatively to what one has, or one runs into conflicts and becomes confused. So basically, taking your time with everything that you learn, just allowing it to sit and settle within yourself, and allowing this processes, and they are not kind of mind processes. They are just the processes that happen by just contemplating and allowing the things to be. So not necessarily even very active, you know, like after a big meal, we don't go running usually. We go and sit and let the food settle. And that's what we do with the teachings as well, or that's the second stage. And then the third stage, the third part then to receiving of knowledge is reasoning, to reason it through. Why was it like that? What benefit has come to me from that? And how can it be made practicable in life? How can it benefit myself and others? So that's when this knowledge becomes wisdom, and we can apply it in our life and use it practically for our own lives and also to support others. Okay. Now, before we go on to the next one, to the next point, let's take a moment and just breathe together. And I would like to suggest that we really, for a moment, breathe in unison. So I do like this with my thumb up for in-breath and this for out-breath. And just simply breathing. Let's continue just for a little bit longer. the fourth grade of attainment of the inner life is meditation. If one has unlearned all that they have learned, if one has a teacher, and if one has received the knowledge of the inner life, still, meditation is the one thing which is most necessary, which in the Sufi words is called riyazat. So by just being together and meditating, we charge ourselves, and also so we are kind of feeding our soul, just like we feed our physical body when we intake food, and when we breathe in, we, by meditating, we nourish our soul. And in our Sufi lineage, we have such a vast kind of vocabulary of practices that we can use for meditating. So it's very abundant. And Hazrat Inayat Khan talks about three different things that are the most important in terms of meditation. He says the first element of meditation is rhythm. And this means to find a specific and consistent time when we meditate. Like when it's every morning a certain time, or every evening, or you know, and then just keep to it. The better we are able to keep to it, the more beneficial it is. And you know, if you are like me, then you lose that rhythm every now and then pick up again, and do your best to to pick it up again and keep that rhythm. The second thing, the next step, is to think of the idea of that idea of meditation at other times during the day. So this is basically when we have that rhythm and that consistency of meditation, then it naturally starts to bleed into the other areas of our life, and you start finding that during the day at random times, you know, this a wazifa comes to you, or you know, you notice your breath more, or whatever it is, the practice that you're doing, that, you know, you remember during the day, you know, at different times. And then the third stage is the continuity. So that is, the third stage is continuing meditation through day and night. Then one has attained to the right meditation. So, this is what Hazrat Inayat Khan was saying to his first advanced murid, Murshid Arabia. I think Shabda was reading that passage to us in Turkey as well, that, you know, you do this practice, he gave the particular La ilaha illallahu, you do this practice, and soon you will notice that not a moment goes by that you are not remembering the one. You know, that it becomes automatic, and you will continue doing the practice day and night. So that might not be as soon as we might imagine, but it will come. And it will be more, it will come more sort of more frequent, these rememberings, and the way to that the breath is guiding us, for example, becomes more and more everyday part of life. Sufis say that when we walk, when we take one step toward Allah, Allah takes 10 steps towards us. So, you know, so that is what we are talking about as well, that we do a little bit, you know, like every little bit of effort carries a lot of benefit. You know, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, my Buddhist teacher, used to say that, you know, every time you do practice, you know, the benefits are like sky, immeasurable benefits. So it's kind of like we are like a small magnet, and then the divine is the very powerful magnet. So when the small magnet goes just tiny bit towards the big magnet, then the big magnet is like, you know, powerfully attracting the small magnet towards itself already. So, and then the 10 steps that Allah walks 10 steps towards us, it's kind of like, it's, you know, that's the grace. That's the grace starting to flow through us, you know, when we put that one little effort in. So, Hazrat Inayat Khan says, the study of 1 year and the meditation of 1 day are equal. The study of 1 year and the meditation of 1 day are equal. Meditation is not only an exercise to be practiced. If a person closes their eyes and sits doing nothing, they may just as well go to sleep. In meditation, the soul is charged with new light and life, with inspiration and vigor. And in meditation, there is every kind of blessing. Let's do a little bit of that now, a little bit of practice following this. In meditation, the soul is charged with new light and life. Light is Yanur, and life, Yahai. So we breathe in this time, we breathe in Hai. And then we breathe out Nur. So we breathe in the life energy, and then we breathe out, radiating that light out from our heart in all directions. Okay, so we do that for a little bit. Actually, let's start with just saying Yahai and Yanur, and then we take it into the breath in after a small while. Yahai Yanur, 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 يا حي يا نور يا حي يا نور. And now let's do that on the breath. Breathing in حي, breathing in life energy. Breathing out نور. Feeling the light radiating out. And letting go of the words, just breathing for a few more moments with the feeling. Amen. The purpose of meditation is to find and live the inner life. There must be stillness of mind and body, and then the inner life pours its unlimited magnetism, vitality and wisdom upon the person. To stop the mind and calm the nerves, one does not introduce another method which compels attention on the mind and nerves. One begins with the breath. Hazrat Inayat Khan is telling a little story. Once I was with a man who was in the habit of meditating, and while we were sitting near the fire and talking about things, he went into the silence. And I had to sit quiet until he opened his eyes. I asked him, "It is beautiful, is it not?" And he said, "It is never enough." So there is also, there are stories of Nyogen Senzaki and Hazrat Inayat Khan meeting, and when they first met, both entered into samadhi, into the silence, into the meditation together, never spoke a word. And then when they were done, there was just joy and completion. So Hazrat Inayat Khan says, "Those who experience the joy of meditation, for them there is nothing in this world which is more interesting and enjoyable. They experience the inner peace and the joy that cannot be explained in words. They touch perfection, or the spirit of light, of life and of love. All is there." So now the last thing, now we have touched upon the four. First one, unlearning. Second one, spiritual guide. Third one, acquiring the knowledge of inner life. Fourth one, meditation. And now the last one, the fifth one, which is living morals. The fifth necessity in the spiritual path is the loving of everyday life. There are no strict morals which the spiritual guide enforces upon a person, but the essence of morals is practiced by those treading the spiritual path. So we don't have rigid rules that we need to follow on the Sufi path, but by attuning ourselves more and more with this inner life principles, we naturally are gravitating towards following these morals. So there's five different morals. The first one is constantly to avoid hurting the feelings of another. So we avoid hurting feelings of another. So it relates to this unlearning. We are unlearning this our kind of ego's need to be right or to protect our opinions or to react and judge others. So that's the, and then by doing that, there's less a chance that we hurt someone else's feelings. The second principle is to avoid allowing ourselves to be affected by the constantly jarring influences which every soul has to meet in life. So when the first one was to not hurt others or not hurt others' feelings, then the second one is kind of creating this buffer around us, or the protection, you could say, that we don't get so trodden down or so disheartened when difficulties happen to us, that we are able to hold ourselves through difficulties that come our way. The third one is to keep our balance under all different situations and conditions which upset this tranquil state of mind. So the third one is stay balanced. And you know, and that doesn't mean that there is absence of storms. It just means, again, keeping that inner calm in the face of all the storms. And Hazrat Inayat Khan says, in order to do this, one practices the walking meditation, the fikr of posture and of movement, the repetition of the daruds, and the attention on breathing and walking. All these help to promote and maintain tranquility. So the meditation, walking meditation, sitting meditation, zikr, darud, prayer, and breath, attention to breath. The fourth principle is to love unceasingly all those who deserve love, and to give to the undeserving their forgiveness. And this is continually practiced by those on a inner life, on a path to inner life. So this is when we learn to really love as many beings and people as we are able to, and those we cannot love, then at least, you know, offer them forgiveness. Then that kind of, that lifts a burden from our hearts, so that our hearts can be lighter and we can travel again through life more easily. It's like this story of um, of a Murshid and a Murid again, and Murid is saying, well, you know, how heavy is a burden of life? And then Murshid is saying that, well, he's taking a glass of water and holding it up and saying, how heavy is this glass of water? And the pupil responds, well, I don't know, some grams, whatever, however light, however heavy it is, 200 grams, let's say. And then Murshid says, yes, how heavy is it when I hold it for a minute? It doesn't feel heavy at all, it's light. If I hold it for an hour, then my hand starts to be tired. And if I hold it the whole day, then my arm is totally aching and it feels very heavy. And that's how it is with that forgiveness, and letting go of the burdens, of life that we don't need to carry with us. That if we hold them up only for a short time, it's okay. You know, we can do it. But if we carry something with us for years on end, it becomes very heavy and very big. So, and then the last principle is detachment. The fifth principle is detachment amidst the crowd. But by detachment, I do not mean separation. It is only meant rising above those bondages which bind us and keep us back from our journey towards the goal. So it's not isolation, it's not separation, it's just keeping ourselves fully present and not, you know, not too attached. You know, detached but fully present. So, that's our assignment. Easy. And that concludes the chapter 8 for today's study. So, let's take another moment and go back into our breath and into our heart. And for a moment in our heart, just considering these five principles that we just went over. Not hurting others, not letting the outer circumstances hurt us. Keeping our tranquility, our calm, and then loving and forgiving, and being detached and at the same time fully present in life. We offer our gratitude to all the teachers and guides who have been before us and from whom so much knowledge and experience of the inner life flows to us, so that we don't need to invent the wheel ourselves, but we can just follow in their footsteps. And know that we will get to the goal, to the final goal where we want to get. Amen. Amen.